Do you have an intro lyric?
Yes, it's a call and response.
Mm.
So I'm going to say something, and then you are going to say...
Tangerine.
It sounds like you're not going to preface, which is concerning, but also it's kind
of
exciting.
I'm trying to fucking do it, man! All you got to say is 45.
45.
Radio
45.
So yeah, great, good.
That was more to it.
Same, yeah.
Try again.
Yep.
Okay. All India Radio
45.
Two and ones
45.
Argo Records
45.
Trojan Records
45.
We are Hottest 100s and thousands, and we have taken control of your radio station. This is the podcast on the
45.
In which we talk about the songs that have been hot enough to be in the Triple J Hottest
45.
My name is David James Young. I'm one of the
45
voices you're going to be hearing for the next
45
minutes or so. Joining me once again, it's...
You paused!
I was...
Pavlov's dog!
Pavlov's dog!
45!
Adam Buncher.
40 high.
There we go. Nathan Harrison.
40 high.
Andrew McDonald.
50 high.
Whoa!
You guys, small brain, expanded brain.
Jesus.
But yeah, holy shit, we are talking about the Hottest 45.
Mm. Like, we start- oh, wow. It actually, yeah.
Yeah.
This has been set up so wonderfully. This is a good podcast.
it's a great podcast.
Very
it's,
well
it
scripted.
Is very so professional. Good.
I haven't done this yet because it would be fucking foolish, but I can show you how professional I am as a person. I have considered getting drunk before recording one of these to see if it would be funny or not.
I thought about that too,
but we record them in the morning, so that's-
let's do that on the same day.
Can you guys just come here fucked up I'll just be me normally,
because Andrew, drinking in the morning by yourself, bad. Expanded brain, drinking in the morning with someone else,
party.
I saw a show years ago called Shitface Shakespeare, where they did Midsummer Night's Dream, but every night a different cast member would get very drunk before the show.
Like too drunk.
Yeah, too drunk. there was vomiting, and there was them just leaving the stage in various scenes. Very funny. And it was in a fringe show, and that's like obviously perfect fringe show fodder. Like that, it just sold out like straight
of course.
Away.
It's so good.
I'm well into
So we'll
that.
Do that.
Yeah, so sorry 1 week, listeners.
Coming in at number
45.
Hell yeah, it's the motherfucking Cure with Wrong Number. And that wrong number is
45.
46.
What a good intro.
We had it all.
Before I had the best laid plans, it's out of a
the motherfucking cure. Thank you, all the same. Back yet again in one of the most inexplicable reigns in the history of the Hottest 100.
Well, that's not bad math, the cure in front of me.
We have had a lot to talk about with the
yes,
cure.
Yes, it is.
Because more than we are going through their least popular era.
And every like time I'm like, this is going to be the last one.
Yeah.
This is going to be the last time they're here.
Like, we start with, like, one of their biggest hits, Friday I'm in Love, and we've worked our way up year by year to Wrong Number, which, by the way, came in at number
45.
You guys hate this. I'm so into it. Was this on Bloodflowers?
No, it's from the Galore single soundtrack.
Okay, this is where Deej and I stopped talking for a while because the Cure fans have logged
logged the fuck on.
Yeah, this
on.
Like all tracks that are exclusive to compilations and best ofs, never one of the best tracks of a band when a band includes a new single and a best of. The exception, of course, being The Cure's Cut Here, one of their best songs from Greatest Hits 2001.
Oh, but and this... of course, The Foo Fighters with Wheel.
I would argue You Know You're Right by Nirvana is pretty good.
Yeah, true.
It is pretty decent.
Yeah. I think this is a really interesting song because it's clearly Rob trying to write what is still definitely a Cure song in the context of like 90s electronic rock. Still got like the Cure trademarks of like that kind of some shimmering guitar, Rob's vocals undeniably great and everything. Lyrics that kind of have like abstract alienation going through them all. There was a period here where there's a few different Cure songs where Rob was writing songs that were kind of reflecting like American alienation from a Brit's point of view. Like, there's a bunch of that on Wild Mood Swings. I don't know if people in this room are going to love this song. I really like this song just because I'm a massive tragic for The Cure. And this was on the first Cure compilation I had, which was just the greatest hit. So I listened to that a lot and I really loved it. And I love this song. The line before the break where he has the is there room in your life for one more trip to the moon is particularly beautiful, being a callback to their classic song Love Song from 1989, which was written as a wedding gift to his then fiance, now wife, where he says fly me to the moon, and then like years later he's like, is there room in your life for one more trip to the moon, to this person he's been married to for a number of years. It's very beautiful to me because I'm a fucking loser for The Cure. Please tell me what people think of this song. I'm very interested to hear.
I love this song.
Yeah, great.
I do often wonder, particularly with this song and a few other ones, because when I was into The Cure, I was into like bands very intensely for quite a while.
Yeah.
And I feel like I would move through albums and compilations and like particular songs intensely, almost in the order of the album or whatever. Like, it would just, you know, be like, oh, this is my favorite song. And a week later, I'm like, now I'm really into the song immediately after it, kind of thing. Because I guess that's how I did music at the time.
It's how you consume music as a teenager.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the first time I heard Wrong Number, I probably wasn't super into it.
I definitely wasn't into it to begin with.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't sound like much like any other Cure song.
No. But it grew on me hugely. Like, I really love this song. Like, yeah. I love that structurally it's a Cure song, but yeah, it's playing with all these other sounds. You know, I love the kind of quite cold electronica sounds, like, in the start. And then you get that really warm flourish of piano before it moves into new sections. I think I really, really like that. Mm. The lyrics are kind of typically simple, particularly in the verses, like the, you know, red and gold and all the color stuff. So I get a lot out of it. And it's a kind of, especially the chorus is so like big and fun and energetic. And that's not something that The Cure do in that way very often at all.
I thought when there's the guitar solo, that's really soaring. That boom, it's really bright and it's really lovely.
Yeah. So I kind of appreciate it as a Cure way of getting to this type of song that I'm sure like many other bands do as well and potentially do a lot better. But because I love The Cure so much, I love that type of song living in this world, like in this instance. So yeah, I know. I love it. But
what do you guys think?
Adam, do you think? Because you're like the least Cure fan of
all.
You're
the most sick.
Not that you are. You're the most sick.
You've had the least Cure.
I like Cure songs. I do not like this Cure song.
Okay.
This is not the Cure song I enjoy. I just found it really irritating.
Yeah, right. Had you heard it before?
Everything about it. No.
Yeah, right. I wouldn't heard it expect before. Yeah.
Nothing about it really worked for me. Although I did really, really enjoy that this is one of the few songs we have where there's an absolute roll credits moment. Wrong credits!
Yeah.
Like, there it is.
Yeah.
Look to camera.
Yeah. It was big. It's big time. Look to camera. So I just didn't.
Yeah, I'm honestly not super surprised. The beats of it are so not Cure-y. I mean, like the actual rhythm, not just like the song, like the moments. Yeah. The actual rhythm is not really Cure-y. And also, I was looking at the credits for this song just in preparation for this. It was actually, it's just Rob, Simon Gallup on bass, and Reeves Gabrels. who wasn't actually a member of the band at the time.
Right.
He's a guitarist who played with Bowie, who actually joined The Cure as a proper member maybe 4 years ago.
Okay.
But he worked with Bowie during the Tin Machine up through the 90s when Bowie was doing a lot of this electronic beat stuff.
Mm.
And I wonder if he's influenced with this, because the electronic beaty nature of the song is super not something The Cure do ever, really, apart from on like the remix record.
Yeah.
They don't really do this kind of song.
Oh, and that fucking Judge Dredd song.
Yeah, of course, yeah. yeah.
It's the banger.
Because this sounds a bit like a soundtrack song, right? Like, it's for The Cure, I mean. Like, at the very least, you can tell it's not on a Cure album.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a Cure song. It's in the 90s and it's in the Hottest 100. I would assume it was part of a soundtrack.
just
by precedent.
Yeah.
Mm. And, like, Hottest 100 listeners do not get a good idea of what The Cure is as a band.
Fully, I was just thinking that. Like, imagine if this was one of the only times that you heard The Cure.
Yeah.
And it was this song.
If you only digested The Cure from Hottest 100, and that was the only way you'd ever heard The Cure, you would not know what The Cure sounded like.
Oh, they did that great Friday I'm in Love song, and then they just got really weird.
A bunch of quasi industrial numbers.
What was that about?
Really weird for that mainstream pop band. Yeah. But David, do you have a love for this song? Or?
Not a love. I like it. Like, it's kind of funny to kind of picture the band at this juncture.
Mm.
You know, like, as we've talked about bands that, you know, were big in the 80s and were still doing shit in the 90s, trying to like keep up with the times and be like, oh well, how do we navigate this? How do we respond to this? You know, that's my best Robert Smith impression. This is fun. Like, that hook is super catchy, and it's kind of funny to imagine Robert Smith having a little groove around to that, you know, super electronic, like disco-y kind of beat. I don't think this is anyone's favorite Cure song by a considerable...
It really should not be.
Yeah. But, you know, I see the merit to it, and it has been really, really fun trying to find new things to discuss when it comes to The Cure and being like, what the fuck were they doing? You know, it's just like the Judge Dredd song and like, what was the other shit?
The one from The Crow.
Oh, the one from The fucking Crow.
That one was good. Shut up.
I thought that there would be more dislike for this song around. I actually went looking for it amongst Cure fans online. Like, I was Googling Wrong Number is the worst Cure song. Trying to find...
I'm just imagining you like signing up to a Cure forum with like a fake name and being like, oh, I love The Cure. How much does this song suck though, right, everyone? And
refresh. Yeah. Kind of. But there wasn't as much hatred around as I thought, which makes me, I don't know, because I really didn't think this, I thought this was pretty bad.
Fair.
Pretty bad.
That's fair.
I certainly dismissed it when I first came across it.
Well, maybe I'm just in that phase.
Yeah, I can see why there wouldn't be love for this song. I like it because I know how like fucking... I don't know, 16 years to enjoy it heaps. Like, so there's only so many so much that I'm not going to...
A little bit of time. Coming in at number 44, this is The Tea Party with Temptation. I believe that's how it's pronounced. Coming in at number 44 with Temptation. I believe that's in a certain dialect. there's a couple of different things that come up on Google Translate, so, you know, just working my way around it.
It comes up as like, are you listening to a Tea Party song?
How could you tell?
Yeah, so I have not listened to a single Tea Party song since we last talked about them, season 3, episode 7.
Holy shit. What song was that?
I can't even remember.
Well, you remember the episode. Well,
I looked it up.
You probably just remembered it perfectly naturally, you big nerd.
I remember numbers, not words.
If you had like a really dorky like rap, like, I remember numbers, not words. That's why I'm a massive nerd.
Good one.
Sick. That was tight.
Fire in the Head was the last time we talked about this.
I don't remember that song.
A bit. Like, culturally appropriative, yeah? Wasn't there, like, some dorky sitar in there or something?
Yeah, probably. Well, this one has an interesting instrument as well. To quote Wikipedia, Temptation is a standard three-piece rock song with keyboard accompaniment and an introduction composed of tar, lute, and a sped-up sample of Led Zeppelin's When the Levee Breaks. That's about as passionate as I can get about this song too, Wikipedia. It's got a good beat, like as a rock song, like I just don't care about the tea party.
It sounds so 90s with its beat as well though. It's like dun 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 dun.
Like they're good at that.
Yeah.
But is that something anyone should be striving for? Mm.
Well, you guys are way too chilled out about this song. This is diggity dog shit. this is like, we do not be chill about this song being bad. Because seriously, this is really bad. This is a really bad song. Shaking as your sex takes hold is one of the first. This song is like Creed, if Creed were just hell-bent to let you know how much they fuck.
Horny Creed.
Horny Creed.
Horny Creed. Horny Creed.
This song wears leather pants and touches you on the waist and you tell it to stop and it doesn't. This song is like your creepy uncle who says things at the dinner table and it's just like, why are you talking about that? We're glad that you found love again, but please stop saying these things. There are children around. I hate it so much, I love it. So, like, that's where it goes. Case in point, the way he says illusion.
It's called an illusion, Michael.
Great, like, Arrested Development tie-in there. But also, that is the only time where this song would be appropriate. If you were, like, a bargain basement David Blaine wannabe, you had your sexy assistant up there, scantily clad, and you're about to cut her in half and expect everyone to be really amazed by that. And you're doing, like, the real, like, the sexy dance in the wood.
It'd be such a horny shit magic show.
This song is a horny shit magic show.
I thought this was crap, and not nearly as bad as you. Like, oh, I think this at least sounds like them as a band. Like, I can tell what they are as a band here.
I can too.
Yeah, I don't like it. Yeah. And like, I hadn't gotten Sexual Predator vibes from it. But yeah, it's this song is a bit of a sex pest.
But worse than that, like, because it starts with the sexiness or whatever. And what even are you trying to say about sex? Because the lyrics make no sense.
Because he's horny on man.
But then the bridge comes in and he starts talking about philosophy. He's like, we live in a world. It's like you're in the middle of fucking, man.
Yeah, well, that's like,
fine, you take a minute, man.
As if you can't see some fuckwit dude at like a party say, like, doing that, you know, that like predatory dude thing where they put the hand on the wall, which is disgusting. And if you see someone doing that, I implore you to murder them. That bullshit move that people pull, where they talk about trying to get all deep as a way to get somebody offside so you can give them unfulfilling sex. And now that I think about it, I think this song sucks hard as well.
Yeah.
This song is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
It's really bad.
Yeah. I think I just didn't want to engage with it at all, but now other people are.
Now
I'm happy to join
about
in.
It yeah. sucks, right?
Yeah. It does
so
suck.
Bad.
Yeah.
This is a bad song.
Yeah.
God.
Dare we say it?
Let's wait.
Not yet.
Let's wait and let's see if we can close the loop later on. Let's wait and see.
Oh, no, I meant the free word.
Oh, this song sucks.
No.
Oh, our famous catchphrase. This song sucks.
This song sucks.
I forgot. The famous catchphrase we know and love. I don't like this song very much, but in free words.
Joined once again by our good friend Michael McDonald.
See, this is the thing. Like, deep cut listeners of the podcast would understand what we're talking about, because this is a very season one thing.
Apparently, I didn't.
Yeah. We need to find out where the rest of the, you know, Deej, where are you?
Because
for all you know, Adam, you've been trashing Deej's favorite song of all time.
You absolutely have. Yeah, this is a masterpiece. Imagine just went to mute me.
Imagine putting your arm up against the wall and telling someone at a party that this song is a masterpiece.
Have you listened to the Tea Party?
Yeah, obviously this is fucking hilariously bad. Like, I'm fascinated by how horny Jeff Martin is. Do you reckon he fucks with his necklaces on?
Absolutely.
Yeah, like he's got like a Jesus piece and he's got like a little chakra kind of thing.
You know what? I reckon keeps the vest on too.
Keeps the vest on.
Not buttoned up.
Nah.
Unbuttoned vest.
Loose, yeah. Jim Morrison style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, Jim Morrison style.
Gonna have to do this shit Jim Morrison style.
Yeah. If there's one thing he does, it's Jim Morrison style. You know what? The connection I've always made? When Jack Black sings, he sounds like what Jeff Martin is seriously trying to do.
Oh my god, yes!
Yeah.
Somewhere deep.
Yes, yeah. He does. It's like Reef and Adam Sandler.
Oh.
It's Reef and Adam Sandler. Yeah. It's Jack Black and Jeff Martin.
Yeah. So this is a bad song for bad people.
Yeah! Which is YouTube, why I'm so into it.
YouTube comment, I liked this song better when it was called Army of Me by Björk and came out 2 years earlier. No one wins in that comment. What are you doing? This doesn't sound like Army of Me.
Oh, and now you dragged Björk.
Yes, exactly.
What's that YouTube comment's name, Nathan? Drag them.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, they're dragging themselves here. The Werewolf Jesus. Imagine calling yourself the Werewolf Jesus and dicking on this song. Like, where do you think you fit in? Like...
I think we've earned the right to throw back to our classic season one catchphrase. Shall we?
I think we should.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
45!
Fuck this song.
45!
Fuck this song.
Fuck this song.
Fuck this song.
Number 43, this is Ammonia with You're Not the Only One Who Feels This Way.
Cuts like pins and needles.
With You're Not the Only One Who Feels This Way. Andrew, are you the only... No, I can get this. Are you the only one who has ever thought to go so far as to feel...
Ammonia, last time we spoke about them, was the surprisingly much-loved drugs. Despite the song title, we all actually got down with that quite a lot. It was
that's a good track.
Charming and endearing.
Yeah.
Forever, like, associated Season to three. Us as a podcast, because that was the... When Nathan and I went in to talk about our podcast on Triple J, they asked us to bring in a bit of a deep cut, and we chose Ammonia. We chose drugs.
Yes.
So we chose drugs.
We chose drugs.
And it was a damn good tune. Yeah. I'm really glad we all liked that.
And nice of Triple J to have us in as well, to shout us out. She probably returned the favour. Don't know, listeners, if you've ever heard of Triple J, the radio station. They do some pretty good work.
Worth listen.
But they actually do a countdown every year that's based off this podcast.
Yeah. Hottest 100s and 1000s and 10,000s.
What if, you know, it wasn't just songs from the 90s, but songs from this year?
Yeah.
And it's what very cute.
And these guys didn't talk.
Yeah. But this song, I was really hoping it was going to be as good as Drugs. Also the song Drugs. But this just doesn't wow me as much. I don't know. They sound a bit morose and they're enjoying themselves less. I'm okay with morose rock,
I'm okay with people not enjoying themselves.
Yeah, it's very much my bread and butter.
Me too.
But I want my sad bands leaning into it, and this sounds like it's meant to be a B-song or something. I don't know. I was really hoping there was going to be that kind of vibe that their drug song had, was just that kind of like, yeah, man, leaning into this with the beers and it's nice. And this, I don't know, I thought this was a really quite a generic song. It just didn't click with me at all. This is the first one in a long time that I've just really been not impressed or angry by. I was like, this is, I could absolutely take or leave this song. I was let down. I was like, I'm not upset. I'm just disappointed.
Ooh.
The worst thing a parent can say.
I like it a bit more than that. Yeah. I agree, though. Drugs was such a fun discovery.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was also really... And it's sad that this isn't the same thing.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. I mean, it kind of still has the same sort of, like, the simple structure. There's easy lyrics. And I think there's a nice guitar tone in there as well.
Mm. Yeah, the guitar
which
tone
is what I want. Yeah. Just doesn't have the same charm of that first single. I don't begrudge them not being able to recreate that because it definitely felt like a happy accident. But this is also like a kind of weird origin story of the song because they had written the second album or whatever.
11th Avenue?
11th Avenue.
Yeah.
And they'd sort of done everything. And then Dave Johnson, the main Ammonia, Mr. Ammonia, got a call from the record company and they were like, there are no hits on this album. Like, we can't do this without a hit. Can you please write one? And he had like nearly had a nervous breakdown.
Holy shit.
And then,
man, I feel bad for disparity.
Yeah, well, no. And then wrote this song the next morning and then, like, faxed the record company and was like, I've written your fucking single, which is, like,
wow,
baller. There's something nice about it because, like, Drugs was, you know, we talked about it being written in, like, 15 minutes or whatever.
Yeah,
it was
in a jam session, that's right.
Yeah, it was just, like, a jam session. I'm like, oh, this is a cool thing. There's something, like, it's obviously not as nice a story, but I appreciate that there's also a kind of weird story about this song.
If Drugs wasn't such an enjoyable tune, I wouldn't be like, I wouldn't feel bad. I obviously, you can't expect a band to write the same fucking hit again and again.
No.
They're not AC/DC.
But what I do think this song is emblematic of quite well is it really is just kind of like a more poppy Nirvana. And in that way, I think it embodies, you know, post-grunge in a really kind of cool way, or like where rock picked up from grunge. I think it does that. You can see the working of it really clearly there. And I think that's pretty cool. And also, you know, like, it's so obvious to see this band as being a band that was on a similar kind of vibe to a lot of other modern Australian bands like your Violent Sohos and whatnot. I think there's a lineage there.
Yeah. David, if you love this song, you'll be the only one who feels that way. Do you?
It's nice. I like the little guitar melody there. That's quite sweet.
It's nice, isn't it? Yeah.
It's perfectly pleasant. This is no one's favorite song by no one's favorite band. That's kind of the home truth and the kind of harsh reality we have to deal with in this context.
No, I don't think it's completely out of place being at number 43 in this countdown. I think it earns its spot.
I think it speaks as well to, like, you know, this is a band that kind of got very big very quickly.
Yeah.
Pretty much by accident. And that's a weird position to be in and a struggle to kind of get something meaningful out of it, or something, you know, long term or sustainable,
for sure.
Drop That Shit at number 42. It is Corner Shop with Brim Full of Usher.
There's dancing behind movie scenes.
In at number 42 in the 1997 Hottest 100. It's a song by a band called Corner Shop. The song is called Brim Full of Asher. I'm 6, maybe 7 years old. I am sitting at home watching ABC Kids, as I'm wont to do between the hours of, let's say, 3:30 in the afternoon when I get home, and let's say 6 o'clock when the news starts. In that transitional period from ABC Kids ending and the news beginning, a video plays. I am captivated. I am unable to look away from this music video of this young Indian girl sitting on the floor of her bedroom, surrounded by vinyl singles, putting them on and dancing around her room, listening to them and like vibing and getting into it. I'm just like, oh, that's music. Like, that's a thing that people do. Right. Okay. Huh. Oh, and they're playing instruments and this is a song. Right. Okay. I'm formulating my idea of what music is.
Is this a music defining song for you?
It was.
Holy absolutely. Shit, that's big.
Obviously, like, I knew the songs. Heard audio. I knew the songs from Play School, and I knew the songs from Sesame Street.
The Wiggles.
Yeah, that sort of stuff. This was a song. Like, oh, yeah. Like, so they make music for adults as well, I guess. And, you know, sometimes, like, people a little bit older than me listen to music.
Huge.
And it wasn't for years and years. I remember posting in a forum about 10 years later being like, there was this video. There was this Indian girl dancing around her room listening to records. Does anyone know this song? Huh. And someone's just like, are you talking about Brimful of Asher by Corner Shop? And I'm like, let me type that into my computer. Yes. The answer is yes. And because of that, I count Brimful of Asher as one of the most formative songs in my life.
Yeah.
I see this as one of the most culturally significant songs to ever have any sort of significant impact on the charts, because not only was it the first time like an Indian like pop or rock group had a hit, there are Indian immigrants like living in the UK. That's where the name comes from.
Yeah, because, based on the stereotype that,
that,
you know, all Indian immigrants have corner shops.
Yeah. So the song deals with the Indian music industry and like discovering pop music through the use of vinyl, specifically vinyl singles. There are essays about this song. This is something you could dissect for hours and hours and hours. I think this is legitimately one of the most remarkable pop songs ever created. Not just one of the best songs of the 90s, one of the best songs of all time. Every time it comes on, I will never, ever skip this song. The second I hear that Sweet Jane chord progression and I hear those drums kick in and I hear the kind of wafty kind of keyboards, and then eventually the strings will come in and that like back mass, like tape loop guitar, as everything kind of builds up in my head, it's there. Like everything comes flooding back to me. Mm. Those memories, listening to it again as a kid, that sped up and hilariously upbeat Fatboy Slim remix.
Yeah.
That went global. Mm. Like, this song did well, but the remix was absolutely massive.
See, that's the thing. I was listening to this song going like, this sounds weirdly familiar.
Yeah.
So what is this about? And then I go like, wait, I know, how do I know this chorus? I know for sure I've never heard this song before.
I even more, when it started and the guitar starts, I was like, well, this is a bit derivative of that 45 song, isn't it? And I was like, oh, it is this song. But wait, but what do I know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, right.
You know a remix.
Fatboy.
Yeah. Because I must have, whenever I've heard that Fatboy Slim song, just never had the title within arm's length to be able to see what it actually was.
Obviously, this song, like...
Yeah, can we just acknowledge, Deej, that's fucking beautiful. Mm,
that's huge,
like,
man.
That's huge. Magic.
Yeah, honestly, like, I just have a lot of affinity with this song. Like, obviously, you know, it's indebted to the Velvet Underground and, you know, like, heaps of,
'60s and... no one else is indebted to the
No, I'm saying, like, obviously, like, it's not the most original song, you know? Like, it's very much, you know, derived from that, but that chorus is brilliant. Like, that is one of the catchiest choruses of all time. And even the line is ridiculous as everybody needs a bosom for a pillow. Like,
so much fun.
Yeah, right?
So, and everyone does.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. But then to add in Mine's on the 45, you know, it's just like,
yeah,
some people, you know, have lovers. Some people have best friends. I have music. The one thing that has been a constant in my life from the ages of 4 to 27, which I currently am, is music. And by extension, Brimful of Asher. So here we are. Yeah.
For me, I like this. Like, I'm familiar with this song, obviously. But hearing this now without the non Fatboy Slim remix, it's like having an itch that I can't scratch, man. Like, it honestly gives me fucking anxiety to hear it at this speed.
Oh, right. Because
I'm knowing the Fatboy Slim version. For like a decade or so,
sure.
More than that. I've been very familiar with the Fatboy Slim remix. I've had the Fatboy Slim Greatest Hits, and it's a regular go-to for mine when I just want some chilled-out music or when I'm going for a jog. I know the Fatboy Slim remix really, really well, and so hearing this at a slightly different pace fucks me up.
That just happened on a neuro level.
Yeah.
That's just your brain saying how the world should be.
Yeah, honestly, listening back to it now, it was the first time I listened to this original song, start to finish, in a long time. And listening to it, like, by the end, I immediately played the Fatboy Slim remix, and, like, my muscles relaxed in a way that was like, I've gotten worse massages. Like, yeah. This was on NME's 50 Best Remixes list. They put this at number 2.
Wow.
And they say, does what truly great remixes do, render you unable to enjoy the original. And NME, in this moment, you are more like friend of me. Nice. Yeah, because I agree very much with that sentiment.
Yo, what was number 1?
My Buddy Valentine's Soon, as remixed by Andrew Weatherwell.
Here we go. What?
Have not even heard.
Ah, yes, yeah. The most iconic remix.
Well, yeah. It's some things are great despite not being popular, you fucking Nazis.
What was number 3?
Like all things when I say MFA at number 1, I smile contentedly and close the tab. Like, it's a really lovely song for so many reasons.
Yeah.
And Deej, the stuff about like the Indian history of the band, didn't know, fucking stoked to find out. Mm. Lovely. And yeah, it's awesome. And like, naming it after, like, their childhood friend, Asher, yeah, I think.
Asher's a reference to Asher Bozal. Now, she is an Indian singer who's worked on legitimately 1,000-plus Bollywood films.
Yeah, yes. Nice.
What you have is you have the actors on stage, and they're apparently singing, but they're actually miming, and then you have someone behind who's actually doing the recording.
She's a playback singer.
Playback singer, that's Asher in all cases. In 2011, she was officially recognized by the Guinness Book of World Records as the most recorded artist in music history.
Wow. Very, like, iconic Indian.
Most recorded artist in music history.
1,000 films
what
plus.
A fucking record to have. That's high.
Right? That's wild.
Yeah.
More than just a brimful. You got a whole lot there. So, like, that's
King Gizzard are coming for her, though.
Yeah. That's even nicer. Yeah, there's so much love about this song. And this is just my personal history, being way more familiar with the Fatboy Slim remix, makes it really difficult for me to enjoy this. Not for any fault of the song, just because of the way I happen to have consumed the original. It's like, if you had spent your entire life loving one song, and then somebody played that song to you, and it was done at half speed, and this is the way you enjoy the song. Just enjoy the song. That's fucking awful.
And yet you can't understand why some people hate Vaporwave?
Yeah, well, sometimes they're meant to be annoying.
I'm certainly more familiar with the remix, but not to that extent.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow, great. I mean,
I feel like any good analysis we have, we're just like sitting like we're idiots next to this beautiful story.
So I was like sleeping on this band and this song, apart from the Fatboy Slim thing for, you know, the largest part, but this was big. Like, these guys were big. The album When I Was Born for the 7th Time, which was released in September of 97, that has got crazy good reviews. Rolling Stone called it one of the essential recordings of the 1990s later on. Some of the highlights include some pretty wild collaborations, including friend of the countdown, Allen Ginsberg. He features on there.
Great.
Yoko Ono and Paul McCartney approved a cover of Norwegian Wood in the Punjabi language. That's on the album as well. And apparently, like, there's like some disco influences on there. There's obviously this sunny kind of indie rock vibe going on there as well. Also, these guys, very interesting relationship to our friend Morrissey from the Smiths. They publicly hated him.
Nice.
Oh, what heroes.
Because they're not white.
Especially at this time, because Morrissey was apparently flirting with a lot of skinhead imagery at the time when these guys were getting started. So these guys chose to show their distaste by burning pictures of Morrissey any opportunity that they would get. Live shows, press conferences. They even stood outside the office where his record label was and just burned pictures
heaps
of Morrissey.
And that was like before it was cool to hate on Morrissey.
Because now everybody hates
him.
They were
well across it. Now, this actually made
trailblazers.
British media were not about it at all because they loved Morrissey and they would just denounce these guys.
Non-white people.
Yeah, and they were just denouncing them as attention seekers
and
whatever.
Of fucking hacks.
You can just see that now. It's just kind of like, yeah, well, we see why this band was significant and why that's a problem.
More reason to love them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool discovery of a band, and I actually have a lot of interest in going back and listening to that album because this song absolutely bangs.
Should I do it one more time? I think I should do it one more time. Coming into number 41. This is Beck with Deadweight.
been paved, going my way. You're so alone today, like a ghost town I found. There's no relief, no salt in the sea. Is it true what they say? You can't behave, you gamble your soul away. Measuring your dreams, oh, this life seems like the gristle of loneliness.
Back at number 41 in the 1997 Hottest 100, that's a track called Deadweight. I'm not doing it. I'm not fucking segueing and saying, Adam, you're deadweight.
Because
nice. You're not. You're not a burden. You fucking lift us all up. You dog.
Well, cheers for that.
Mwah.
All right, so this, it's a movie soundtrack song. It's another movie soundtrack song. Mm. Taken from the movie A Life Less Ordinary, which was nominated for Best Song at the 1998 MTV Movie Awards, but it lost out to Will Smith's Men in Black, and you know what? Fair.
Yeah.
You messed with the classics.
Yes, there's four.
Men in Black.
Yeah. On the table, pretty good song, but it ain't Men in Black.
No. Yeah, I'm sorry, Beck, do you rhyme MIBs with MIBs?
Yeah.
Because Willard Smith does.
Yeah, this song itself was recorded in the downtime between Mutations and Odelay, and you can actually find it now on the deluxe edition of Odelay. It was part of his Brazilian trilogy, where he's playing with a lot of... I don't know exactly what that means.
Because there's a bunch of bossa nova on
yeah,
here.
Right.
Yeah.
He actually went on record talking about this song and the Brazilian trilogy and stuff on USA Today, saying that what he's aiming for is a kind of sonic melding where you can't tell the different elements that he's playing with, where it all kind of comes together. And I think
that's classic Beck.
Right?
That's like his
raison d'etre.
Yeah.
It's his whole, like, not only for this song, I think, you know, this is being a great example of that, but that just let that be an artist statement for Beck in general. Totally cruisy. I like the chorus. It's just something about it. Like the don't let the sun catch you crying in the way that it's delivered.
Yeah.
And the groove of it all, like Beck sometimes just knows how to set up a groove and you just inhabit that. And it's just like being in some warm tropical waters. That's what this song's like.
I'm sure like there's like monetary reasons to do soundtrack like that. But like, I don't know, like as an artist, being so confident to record a song this good and be like, no album, it's okay. I'll put it on a record. Because it's just so quintessentially him, like with the like weirdly sad lyrics, the bossa nova beat, like the whitest shit hip hop vibe and like the 90s like trip hop groove. Like this is just so obviously a Beck song.
Yeah,
like,
so Beck.
Yeah. Like, it's so perfect to be on a 100 playlist. It's just such a, it's just so chilled out for Beck. I love it. Yeah, this is... Like, I've liked the song for a long time. I think it's just really lovely, not quite album standard Beck. Just a bit different, bit poppy, bit, like, sad still. I just love it a lot. It's like, the blending of styles that Beck does so well is such a remarkable thing about him as an artist. Like, let alone the fact that he does some incredibly beautiful soft acoustic things, but the way he blends music in his sample delica driven right groovers is just so fascinating. Like, because bossa nova, like, I got a bit of time for it, like the classics I listen, like Gets Gilberto and that, but like it's so the same idea is so prevalent in bossa nova music,
right?
Like it's always that kind of grooving is like it's quintessentially what bossa nova music sounds like. They all sound so similar, and the fact that you can turn that into something that has a kind of hip-hop vibe is just really fascinating, and it's something that he really stands alone as an artist and that kind of power that he has. Yeah, and like, this is not the best Beck song, but it sounds like Beck, and I'm always happy to hear that, so of course I like it. Yeah.
It's so true.
Yeah.
I think as well, when you're talking about why you'd include it on a soundtrack and not anywhere else or whatever, I think often there'd just be like a creative process where you can't find a place to fit it.
Yeah.
You know, if he came up with it before Odelay came out, I think knowing what we know about Odelay, he feverishly just wrote everything for that in kind of the singular sessions. Like everything that went into that album wasn't a leftover. It was just composed specifically because he was trying to get away from the whole the loser
the
thing.
One-hit wonder.
Yeah, idea, the one-hit wonder status and really trying to rebel against that. I think so often like that's why B-sides and deep cuts are so wonderful to find as fans.
Oh, it's the best.
Because it's not necessarily an indication of lack of quality. Quite the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that they didn't feel a place to put it contextually as artists anyway.
If they're good, and if they're like not necessarily to disparage the idea of people who don't do this, but like if you're a sincere and genuine artist, the B-sides shouldn't be songs that aren't good enough. They should be songs that don't fit.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And this is a great song.
I don't think I love it as much. I think there's something about the vocals that don't quite sit right with me, but it's good. And the blending of styles is just like very cool. And that very weird guitar solo.
Yeah, it's like that's a hell of your comfort.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I'm doing this now and you're here. And I'm like, all right, I guess I am here for this. Yeah, I wouldn't go to this over many other Beck songs.
No, but yeah.
But it's good. It's good. And it does show his craft, particularly with styles.
You can imagine him leaning on a piano in a crushed velvet suit, you know, with just a mic, just cheesing it up. With everything he goes for, he just leans in, doesn't he? Like, if he does hip hop, he just goes nuts with it. If he does funk, you just imagine him with those giant oversized sunglasses, slapping a bass into oblivion. And so when it comes to doing a kitschy lounge homage, you just imagine him going full Burt Bacharach and just sauntering around with the mic, you know.
Mm.
Again, no one's favourite Beck song, but I think there's merit and quality to the fact that he is able to go between all of these styles and all of these genres and ideas so fluidly and fluently. So, yeah, always got time for Beck. That brings us to the end of yet another episode of Hottest 100s and 1000s. Thanks so much for listening. I love you. I appreciate you.
Bless up. I respect you.
Bless up. Before we get out of here, we're picking our favorites and our least favorites in the ever-continuing story of our carryover champs and chumps. Who has two thumbs and a brand new champ?
Dij.
It's on the 45.
Nice.
And my least favourites, it's got to be Tea Party, man.
But is it your new chump?
Nah. Still a loop. Nah. Can't do that to the loop, man.
Gentlemen, I was on the bus on the way over here.
Yes.
And I was listening to the songs in preparation for, you know, just to refresh myself. And I was feeling the rage for the Tea Party and Temptation. And I just thought, you know what? It's been a while since I actually heard Beaver Loop.
It's been a while.
I'm going to play Temptation and then I'm going to play Beaver Loop.
Fucking awful bus ride.
And then the bus crashed.
Yeah. Guys, I hate Temptation more.
Oh, a new jump.
The loop has been closed.
Oh! I didn't know if we'd ever get to say the words new chump.
Yeah. I guess that's bad, really. Like, it's not something you've heard we should congratulate you. Yeah. Like, you feel worse about something that you felt very bad about.
Hey, man, it is what it is.
Wow.
And yeah. What's your fave?
You know, mine was Brimful of Asher, and I might put it as the champ for a while as well.
You reckon? Holy shit!
Whoa! A double whammy!
Whoa!
I'm feeling crazy.
I've been swept up by the winds of change, people.
Yeah, man.
My favourite is Beck, Deadweight. My least favourite is, of course, Temptation. But my champ remains Dandies, and my chump remains Beaverloof, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I'm gonna give Brimful of Asher a fave, especially because of the DJY origin story. But my fave remains Louis Bidet, and obviously Temptation, but still not as bad.
That's okay.
Beaverloop.
That's all right.
Wow. Mm. I can't believe I really thought Beaverloop was going to carry through for all four of us till the end.
No.
Wow.
I gotta go with my heart. My heart hates that song, man.
That's wild.
I was looking
at your mind.
I was looking at next week's apps, and we'll wait and see. Yeah. Oh, dear listener, you will also have to wait and see. unless you're listening to this later on, in which case, just hammer that plus 15 until you get to the next app.
Maybe it's 19.
Yeah. 2020. 21.
You're listening back. Hey.
Well, any one of those 3 years, probably.
How's it going? We're all really worried. But you're listening, so Obviously, things are okay. Yeah. You've got access to podcasts.
Don't worry. You've got access to podcasts.
Yeah. To this one specifically.
Yeah. Someone's transcribed this podcast and someone's reading it out to you aloud as you sit around the charred waste of your house.
Yeah. Hey, things that are good, not the burning remains of your home, but other things this week. Should we talk about those?
What's been good for you this week, Nathan?
This week, well, at this point, not like exactly this week, but I very recently finished reading The Town by Sean Prescott.
Oh, I've been meaning to pick that up.
It's really good.
Can I borrow a copy rather than funding a local artist?
Yeah, I'd hate for you. I'd hate for you to support an Australian author on his debut novel being published by an independent publisher. So I will lend you that copy. It's a book about a writer traveling around.
Oh, very.
Yeah, well, traveling to a town in Western New South Wales, like regional New South Wales, because he's writing about towns in Western New South Wales that are disappearing. Physically, like, disappearing.
Cool.
And it's really great. It's, like, it's clever and it's weirdly sad and a bit existential, but also very funny. The Town by Sean Prescott. Recommend it wholeheartedly.
Wonderful. Sweet. One of my favorite bands of all time, Godspeed You, Black Emperor. The guitarist and also the lead singer of the Silver Mount Zion band, Ephraim Manuel Menak, one of my favorite songwriters. His second solo record came out just a few weeks ago. The album is called Pissing Stars. It's a 45-minute record, very sad and droning, but really beautiful and really tender. The first half is this really sad thing about modern ennui and fear, and the second half of the record really subverts that with some really hopeful beauty in it about togetherness and why we should, in the face of no matter how scary and horrifying life is in late capitalist society, the message of hope and togetherness and love is a really powerful one that he really channels in the music there. Yeah, it's called Pissing Stars by Ephraim Manuel Menak, and it's my album of the year so far, I'd reckon.
You mentioned indie games.
I did.
Last episode. So, yeah, I'm picking up from that. There's one I'm enjoying at the moment called Slay the Spire. Now, this is a deck-building game. Basically, it's as if you were playing a card game against the computer. There are certain ability cards that you get as rewards, and it's all about figuring out combos on the fly and adding certain cards to your deck, but also removing certain cards from your deck. So you have like a really efficient means of, you know, doing whatever it is that you want to do, usually dealing damage to enemies, but also defending and whatever. It's balancing those kind of things. The mechanics are super, super satisfying. The design is excellent. The art's a little simplistic, but like the gameplay itself and the depth of strategy is really great. There are a lot of Let's Plays and streams focusing on this game at the moment, and it's still only in early access.
Yeah, right.
But I'm having heaps of fun.
Like, and what's it called again?
Slay the Spire.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
DJ Y. What's the new album this week?
The new album by Hockey Dad is sick. The new DZ Death Rays album is sick. The new Boat Show album is sick. Get amongst it. Australian rock and roll is bitching right now. Shove them all up your jacksie and tell them DJ Y sent you.
Thank you very much, DJ Y. If something's been good for you this week, this recent time, this day, please let us know, be it in an at Hross100s on Twitter, comment on the Facebook thing, or our preferred method of contact, iTunes reviews.
Five-star
review on iTunes.
Okay, cracking into the top 40 next time. But until next time, on behalf of Miss Andrew McDonald.
Good night.
Miss Adam Buncher.
Illusion.
Nathan Harrison.
Can't tell how much you hate it.
My name's David James Young, 45.